Is Kirby invincible? We're going to find out. 10:04, Domino, Cellini, Chris Cotter in studio with us as well from the ACC Network. He'll be covering that national championship game, which you can hear in town exclusively here on The Fan this upcoming Monday. And what a bizarre day it was for Georgia, because that's a bizarre story. And the bizarre story surrounding another Georgia player, and it also ties into the last name any university or the NCAA wants to hear as well. We'll get to that story in 5 minutes. Kata, welcome in. Good to see you.
Guys, I got the resumes of 18 guys on my desk that would kill me and choke out my grandmother to have your job.
That is, of course, what's at stake. As Chris Cotter's boss years ago used to say to Chris Cotter, when
good
he wanted
guys,
more of
man.
An opportunity at Radio Korea. Great to see you
good
as
to
well.
Do you know that there's an archived Walt Disney's desk? This is how he left it. Do you think someday there'll be an archived of Stakes office with those resumes right there on it? Because the whole thing is,
right.
We didn't touch the pens, we didn't touch, it's all right there.
If you knew then what you know now, would you have said to him, let me see a couple of them?
I keep Let me see a couple of those guys.
I keep hearing about all these resumes and tapes. Just
That's
set a couple of my way.
Right now, Cotter. Buy me a cocktail for crying out loud.
So Jake Fromm is gone, and I kind of alluded to it. Is this, do you think, Chris, going to be the biggest challenge of Kirby's coaching career at Georgia?
I mean, and you guys have probably heard it. How many Georgia fans are calling up and saying, I wish we had that other guy that went to Columbus still, you know? But here's the thing.
There's a few guys they mentioned, and the guy who was, oh, gosh, I wish we, there's a couple of them.
It's always a huge challenge. Look how many programs have gone down that 4, 5, 6 year path without that quarterback after they were up here. Texas, USC. I mean, you can go down the line. Great talent all around. LSU. Look how many years LSU has been good but not great because they haven't had that quarterback. They finally get the quarterback. Now they are where they are because they have all the supporting cast every year.
Nobody's immune to the dip. Now, sometimes it hits harder when you're USC. Their dip is really dramatic. Stanford. Texas. Oklahoma had theirs.
Even Michigan's going through it right now a little bit. They don't have the guy. Like, they have a guy who's pretty good, fits the system okay, but he's not the guy to lead them over that hump.
And I think that's the best way to describe Jake Fromm. I'm not saying anything disparaging, and that's why we thought he was going to leave, Cotter. We thought he was not going to improve his stock any more than what it is now.
That's the point. And I think people, there are people that will knock Jake Fromm and saying he's not prototypical this or he's not as proficient as that guy, but he's a hell of a leader. And you know that the reason why they went with him as a starting quarterback when they had other options were because he owned that locker room. He owned that team. The team believed in him, and every time they got into that huddle, they knew he was going to be able to lead them down the field.
I'll tell you what he suffered from. He's not a wow guy, and we said it's the combines, the cones, the whatever it is. He's not going to wow you. He's not going to wow you at his pro day. His biggest problem was his moment was the freshman moment against Notre Dame. And when you don't have, when people think, well, how many more of those are there going to be? And you start to hear, my God, that guy looks like he's got the moxie and the ability to be the number one overall pick. Well, when you don't have that moment, really, and look, he's been better than that. You start naming him around the country, and you're not going to need much more than the one hand, the one that I'm holding up right now, to say how many guys have really, really been better than him. But guys are more wow than him. And he didn't have anything beyond that Notre Dame. He had a couple of other throws, but it's that Notre Dame game. And when you don't do that for 2 years, people sort of go, eh.
And after Georgia lost to LSU, Cotter, we had people on, and we were talking about Justin Fields. Joe Hamilton was in with us as well, and a lot of people weren't happy because, on one hand, Jake Fromm leaves Georgia as the first quarterback to go his entire career undefeated against Florida since Buck Ballew.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, he's 0-4 against LSU in Alabama. So that's where that line in the sand seemingly is drawn in the eyes of some Georgia fans.
Well, you know what else is interesting, too? They have so much talent, these great recruiting classes that have come in. How many games have you seen one of these prototypical pro receiver types go off like they did in the Sugar Bowl with Pickens? I mean, I just haven't seen that many over the years, and maybe it's just because I'm not watching it as closely as some people over here are, but I'm waiting for one of those receivers to go off like that, and now Pickens goes off like that, and you say to yourself, this guy should be doing this more often, and maybe he will next year. Maybe it's a situation where if you have a different offense, right, with a little bit of a different quarterback,
please,
maybe he'll go off.
Your mouth to God's ear.
I know.
Something has to be... You have to open it up, and you're going to ask your defense. I don't care who the quarterback is next year. Transfer portal, guy walking on campus, guy who knows the playbook a little bit. Your defense, the burden is on your defense even more than it was this year.
Well, because now you've got two offensive starters returning.
Your
center, Trey Hill, and the aforementioned George Pickens. That's it. That's who's left on this offense.
But a lot of great talent, you know, at a lot of positions that'll get opportunities to shine, and I think they will. But this team, don't you think this team is built to lean on its defense? I mean, to me, Kirby Smart, he's built this team is in a lot of respects like Alabama.
But not if you had a four-year starter who people said as a freshman was going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. I would have thought that this should have been the year offensively. We talked about it. The Kentucky game, the South Carolina game. I don't think they were booing players. I think you got to go a long way to boo 18 and 22-year-olds. I think they boo style. I think they were pissed that I'm looking around the country going, why don't we do what Ohio State does? Why don't we do what this team does? And by the way, Clemson has got the one guy who's boring as a quarterback. He's boring. Except when they almost lose to North Carolina, what did they do? They started kicking people up and down steps. He's the only guy he's got size, but he's not Big 12 wow. He's not, chuck it all over the place. Wow. He's just phenomenal.
And again,
and they were getting their butts kicked against Ohio State. I mean, down 16-0 could have been worse. And the lines were moving. The trenches were moving against them. And he goes 60 yards. He's that guy that I'll put you on my back and I'll be boring.
Yes.
But I'll start putting some numbers up on the board.
And that's why he's going to be, if not the first pick when he comes out, one of the first picks in the draft.
He's going to be first. He's going to be the first one.
But you talk about a guy like Jake Fromm, Mel Kiper Jr., for whatever it's worth, says he's the fifth best quarterback eligible for the 2020 draft.
Does that mean Eason's in front of him too?
Yes.
Thank God they didn't do anything as a team. Because the Justin Fields thing, if it would have been coupled up with what Eason's doing out west, that would have been the holy terror of, Kirby, you got to answer to this.
Now, what is Jake Fromm do in Washington's offense against Oregon State, Washington State, Arizona, Colorado?
He's probably not the fifth quarterback.
Yeah, he's putting up numbers. But again,
putting up some numbers.
Yeah, you're talking about Burrow, according to Mel Kiper, Tua, Justin Herbert from the aforementioned Oregon, and Jacob Eason. And D-Led talked to a talent evaluator from the NFC, and he called Jake Fromm a second-tier guy, a second-day guy, compared him to Andy Dalton, who's had a nice career.
Oh, no problem there.
In the NFL.
But that's sort of, I think that's interesting. Did you ever think he was the number one quarterback? You think even back
did you think
he was the first quarterback take? I never saw him as that guy when he was at Georgia. I saw him as a really good quarterback who could win a lot of games, could rally his teammates around him, could be poised, not make mistakes.
I think if you go back right after that game, they said, wow, that's a freshman who just went into Notre Dame. And again, it wasn't because he was wow, big-armed, but I think there was this whole idea, if you can do that as a freshman, think about what he's going to be 2 years from now. I'm not telling you he got better, he got worse. I know his completion percentage really suffered in the last five games around here, but I do think when he was a freshman after that game, people said, he's special. Didn't mean he had the biggest arm. Didn't mean he was going to become an athlete.
Yeah.
But he was special.
Didn't have the measurables. Yes. But I think that's why he is
well,
where
2 years
is,
later.
Nick, to your point, is like he's that second-tier quarterback because he is special in regards to having moxie, leadership skills, and that sort of thing. But everybody at every level, whether you're being recruited out of high school, whether you're an NFL player personnel director, you're looking at measurables. Big, strong arm. Can he make all the throws? Is he accurate? Maybe he's not quite measuring up to the other four that are ahead of him right
now. He's not a wow guy. He will win the 15 minutes. Remember this whole thing we've heard about? It became a big deal. I think Matt Ryan was probably the example when we started to hear, they take you out to dinner to see how you treat the waitresses. Jake Fromm's going to win.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, you know that about that.
He's going to win that night.
A-plus on that report card.
Chris Cotter from ESPN and the ACC Network wears the best form-fitting suits in the business in studio with us right now. So, aside from who's on the roster right now, there's a bunch of names as possible transfers, graduate transfers coming in. And I'm going to ask you about a guy from the ACC and Jamie Newman from Wake Forest.
Yeah. Hello, Newman.
So what do we know about him? Seemingly coming out of nowhere and playing very well for Wake Forest this year.
I loved him.
Dual threat guy, can do a little bit of everything.
Dual threat guy, you know, and they had a lot of injuries at the end of the year, and I did a couple of their games when they had a really good receiving core. I mean, Sage Surratt, outstanding, Scotty Washington, both of them get hurt. So he was in a situation where he had to carry much more of the load, and he was getting beat up, you know, constantly running the football. Didn't have nearly the talent on the outside that he had at the beginning of the year, so he put the team on his back, and they struggled a little bit down the stretch. They had really high hopes. They thought they might be undefeated going into that Clemson game, setting up a big showdown, and it didn't work out that way. But I love him, and he's a really smart kid, too, and a good kid. I think he's one of the top quarterbacks. If I was looking for a quarterback coming in and a transfer, I think Newman is a guy that can get the job done.
We all stand in agreement. It's going to be a graduate transfer, most likely starting, unless, much like Jake Fromm, a guy like Carson Beck comes in and woos everybody. And don't forget, even after that, Jake Fromm didn't start until something happened to Jacob Eason. So, also, we talk about only a couple of starters coming back. This bizarre story comes out of nowhere after Jake Fromm says he is going off to the NFL. Cade Mays was a guy they plugged in everywhere last year and a guy they were counting on to be their starting left tackle next year. All of a sudden, he says he's hired Tom Mars and he wants to go play with his brother at Tennessee. Of course, his dad played at Tennessee. And then you got this lawsuit story where his dad, prior to Cade Mays committing to Georgia, there's an accident at Georgia at some athletics gathering. A chair snaps and slices off his pinky finger. It goes flying across the room. Sam Pittman, who's the offensive line coach at the time, secures the finger. They put it on ice. He says they go to an emergency room on a scale of 1 to 10. The pain was a 10. He gets it, or at least they try to sew it back on. Doesn't work that way. So now he's suing Georgia on top of all
that's
of this.
That's amazing.
Now, you want to talk about a bizarre
that
day.
That is bizarre. Now, have you seen the fingers of guys who played offensive line and defensive line for a long time?
Pointing a lot of different directions.
They're going in all different directions. Yes. So they may have sewn that thing on completely backwards, and you look at him and you say, look, son, you want a future in the NFL? Your fingers are all going to look like that anyway, so you might as well just get it done now and get it taken care of.
But that's because grown-ass men were trying to take my dinner off my table. I just wanted to sit in a chair. Now, I don't know where you come up with the value. Like, that's the thing. I'm always fascinated when people say, I'm going to sue. I want this much or I want that much. Don't you want to be in the meeting where people are going, okay, what do you think we asked for? Okay, we got to make sure it's a number that we can actually get.
But again, I don't think the two walk hand in hand because it was prior to him committing. And the decision to transfer seemingly comes out of nowhere. Rusty Manziel was on with the Front Row from 24/7 Sports this morning. You can hear that at the podcast section. But he said it right after the Sugar Bowl. They were talking to Cade Mays about the offensive line. He was excited. He liked working with Matt Luke. He liked the energy. He was looking forward.
Matt Luke, by the way, is a player's coach, too. No,
he was looking forward
to
next year, and now all of a sudden he wants to go and play with his brother at Tennessee.
So we do know that the guy who was the player guy in the transfer portal who got a bunch of guys, he, Justin Fields and others, instant eligibility, Tate Martell, instant, he now works for the NCAA. Do you actually cite the chair and hold up your finger and go, by the way?
Well, the problem
Charlie!
Is... Or
a little
pinky
dramatic.
Finger in this instance. Thomas Mars is actually representing Cade Mays. Now, he said, yes, he works for the NCAA, but his contract with the NCAA enforcement prohibits him from representing anyone in an infractions matter. This is not an infractions matter. So he's...
What is this? Is this a medical matter? Is this a...
He's a double agent, Thomas Mars, is what he is.
He is, and I was just thinking that. He works for the NCAA.
And now I'm going to go up against you. Because, sorry, that's what the transfer portal is.
Yes.
It's me versus you.
This is the craziest story I've
ever
heard.
I didn't know
that. Yeah, he's representing Cade Mays, yet he still, in certain instances, works for the NCAA.
What a great double dip.
Is he on one side of the hallway to the next side? You know, you come out of your office and you just walk down the hall to somebody else's office and say, let me get my guy to Tennessee.
May I give you historical perspective? He sounds very Italian because I've said this about Italians. We always end up at the right side of the table once the war is over. We fight you. We're about to do a treaty. Oh, okay. Let's get to that side of the table. That's what Italians do. That sounds very much like this.
Yeah.
Or Thomas Marr says, let me go talk to the other guy, and he looks in the mirror and talks to himself. We've settled.
I don't even know.
So signature lines, the exact same signature on the lines?
Do you think he's playing?
Identical.
Do you think he's playing for Tennessee next year?
I think he is.
2020. It's this year.
Thomas Mars is involved, so I've got to believe.
Got to straighten this out.
I've got to believe he's going to be in a volunteer uniform next year. But now what do you do on this offensive line? Like you said, Chris Cotter, you go across the offensive line, you go to the running back position, you go to wide receiver. Hell, you go to the defense. There's a lot of 4 and 5 stars, but maybe a lot of these 4 and 5 stars are going to have to play a lot sooner than you wanted them to play.
And you and I and nobody else knows other than Kirby Smart and a couple other people in that room how these 4 and 5 stars are developing. You know, we certainly remember on signing day, these guys were amazing. But half of these guys never materialize. They never make it to their upperclassmen years.
I got 10 minutes
half
to watch
them. Great.
I got 10 minutes to watch them stretch. I'll tell you what I think about them. There are guys who don't see him in high school that start talking about what they're going to be. Ridiculous. And then there are guys who watch 10 minutes a stretch in August, and they tell you what they're going to be. Oh, don't forget about it. We got the game that we play in the spring. Let me tell you about them. Socially, emotionally, mentally, intellectually. Do I miss home? Do I miss my mom? Do I miss my girlfriend? I'm getting hit for the first time by a grown-ass man who happens to be 21. You have no concept. It's stars. It's great. You make a living with a business and you attach stars. I'm so tired of people telling. It's the underwear Olympics.
Well,
when you're in a certain high school system and you're kicking a dog meat out of everybody.
Here's what I know. This is going to be, aside from the first year he came in, and he got a pass that year because he had, to a certain extent, a mess to clean up. This is going to be the biggest challenge in Kirby Smart's coaching career, hands down.
Ask Chris Cotter. You have a Twitter question of the day, which is a poll question. You offered three choices. I offered a fourth, and I have at least one. I'm Georgia. You're not. Hey, go back to the North, telling me that I'm crazy.
Is that the guy that I blocked? The nut job that I blocked?
I'm not
sure. Fancies himself a filmmaker?
The address for that one wasn't at Cotter ESPN, was it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, thank you.
I've been yelling at you to shut up and go back up north for many years. You never listened to me.
And I've asked you to come with me.
This is the Twitter poll of the day. As a Georgia fan, what concerns you the most? Quarterback, offensive line, or James Coley? And right now, quarterback has the lead by 10%.
Yeah, 45%,
35% for Coley, 20% is the offensive line.
Yeah, I have a fourth option.
What's your fourth?
Florida. Florida concerns me. Because for the first time, I really believe, I said it every day for the last 3 years, May, June, October, I would have said, yeah, Georgia's winning the SEC East. I don't know what you're going to do after that, but you're going to win the SEC East. This is what angered him. I said, today, I'm not telling you that you're winning the East.
Yeah, you're not 100% confident right now, and for good reason. And
Florida's
coming.
Do yourself a favor. If it's that guy, mute him.
Okay.
You don't have to block him.
But I think you take care of your own business, and you remain at the top, and Florida continues to chase you. Now, they might catch up with you, and it may be 1-1A. But if you're George and you continue to take care of business with your recruiting, developing players, get that offensive line straightened out, you have your quarterback situation in place, the rest is going to take care of itself.
But objects in a rearview mirror might be a little bit closer.
They are. There's no doubt that they are.
And Tennessee,
a little ways away, but still coming.
They're going to get somebody.
I know.
I don't know who it's going to be. You better hope it's not you. I don't think the path to the SEC East title, which I you heard me book it. It's done. It's done. They're winning the SEC East. I don't know what happens after that. I don't feel that way today. You have no offensive line. You got recruits. I don't think you have a quarterback. We certainly nobody that we've seen. And what are you going to do systematically? What are you going to do to change that all of a sudden you look like in a game you can go from having an 8-point lead to a 22-point lead like that? You know the best teams, that's what they do to you. They demoralize you. You're in it, you're in it, you're in it. Two touchdowns later, you're not.
Now, I get that if you're a Georgia fan, you want to win championships, SEC championships, national championships. Not that there's anything wrong with that. On the contrary, I think it's the way you should think if you're a Georgia fan. But, Nick, you certainly know a lot about this. The job that John Cooper did at Ohio State, then he gets fired because he can't beat Michigan. But he had Ohio State playing at a very high level every year he was there. Kirby has Georgia playing at a level that this team hasn't seen, you know, a few years with Mark Richt during the Green years and, you know, the Pollock years and whatnot, Musa Smith when they were really good. But this team looks to me like they're going to be on a run where they're going to be as good as we've seen from Georgia since the early 80s. Since 80, 81, 82. And I don't understand why fans are so upset at the job that Kirby is doing. Why I hear about hot seat. Why I hear about he's got to get it done this year. He's gotten it done better than any coach that's been there in Athens for forever.
The problem is the bar has now been raised and it's championship or bust in a lot of fans' eyes. When you come in and have success like Kirby did, especially in year two, and then slowly but surely you regress over the last couple of years, people are going to get a little bit antsy.
But regressing is being the fifth ranked team in the country?
So you want the good news? You want the good news? How many teams right now do you think are capable of winning a national championship?
I think Georgia's in that
group.
No.
How many, though? Eight?
Programs? I mean, like year in and year out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say about eight.
So the good news is...
You're in that group.
You're in that group.
Yeah.
What's the bad news?
You haven't won it yet.
And what's the bad news? Right up the road, Clemson. We don't like them very much.
Right down the road, it's Alabama. I know.
And then down the street and to the right is LSU.
Yeah.
If they get one... Look, Auburn's gotten one. LSU's gotten two. Alabama's gotten theirs. And you're sitting around going, it's like the Falcons. I'm telling you, Falcons fans are upset that you don't have a Super Bowl. You know what they're more upset? That the Saints do. It's galling. It's galling. And by the way, Georgia Tech has won one in the time since you've won one.
I get all that, but then I look at it and I say, are my chances of breaking through from the eight to being the one better with Kirby or better with the field? And I don't know who the field is, and I've seen plenty of teams say, I'm not happy with 11 wins. I want to get a new guy. Then all of a sudden you have 8 wins, and you're scratching your head and saying, where did we go wrong? And it's really hard to get back to 11 wins.
I don't think anybody's saying get rid of him. I think they're asking, why didn't you pick Justin Fields? Why are we falling short?
He's not going to answer those questions.
Of course not. If you asked a Georgia fan 2 years ago, Kirby's going to win a national title before Ed Orgeron. Ed Orgeron.
He barely got that job. He was their third choice.
Yeah.
That's the galling moment where you go, my God, they're going to do it before us too.
All right, Chris Cotter is here with us from the ACC Network and ESPN. We'll tell you a story about what truly sets Dabo Swinney apart from everybody else when we come back. It's Domino, it's Cellini, it's Cotter. It's The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
Nearest you.
Wow, the halfway point already of this program we call Domino and Cellini. Very special guest, Chris Cotter from ESPN and the ACC Network in studio with us as well. The halfway point brought to you by The Joint Chiropractic. You don't need insurance. You don't need an appointment. All you need is your debit card or your credit card to get adjusted over at The Joint. Now,
And go to The Joint and not to Dr. Domino over here. You're not practicing anymore, are you?
He has been known to lay his hands on people to heal them every now and then, but he won't do it with me because he knows I'll sue.
You're Dr. Pete Schmidt. Whatever happened to Dr. Pete Schmidt, right?
He's still being a doctor up in Wisconsin.
Oh, he is.
He's probably under 5 feet of snow as we speak.
No doubt.
As my wife says, $50,000 hands that I do nothing with. Every once in a while, somebody will say something like, I'll stare at him and I go, like Dr. Sid Williams, I'll give him the look and I go, you're healed. You're healed. It's a miracle.
Yeah. Hey, coming up in about 5 minutes, even more ways for you to watch and listen to Monday's championship game between Clemson and, of course, LSU. I want to remind folks that this Saturday at 7 o'clock, at Infinite Energy Arena, the Georgia Swarm going to be battling, and it starts at 7 o'clock. And get this, you're going to save some cash and help Atlanta's Rally Foundation to lacrosse out cancer. To get some tickets, you can go to georgiaswarm.com. 4 members of your family, drinks, dinner, under $100. No place else are you going to get that value other than the Georgia Swarm. So, obviously, you've spent a lot of time, Chris Cotter, around Dabo Swinney. One of the most amazing things about him, now, you got to win for people to praise you for this, is the fact that there's a certain time, like 9 a.m., I believe it is, you can't come to the facility until your kids are off to school if you're on Dabo's coaching staff. You'll get in trouble if you show up early. So, Domino, you would not be a good fit there.
No, I'd be like sitting outside the door going, oh, God, key card doesn't work till 9.
Take care of your family, see your family off to school, to work, what have you. Then you come to work.
The key card doesn't work till 9 a.m. Domino would have them set up a desk with a printer and 5,000 empty sheets of paper outside so we can print out all his stuff.
You know what the good news is? At Clemson, they're an agricultural school. A lot of trees.
But we talk about
a lot of trees, a lot of paper.
You'd be killing them.
Why everybody loves to stay there as far as the staff is concerned. Yeah. It's just the atmosphere is perfect.
And I always wonder, especially over the last couple of years, when you go and you visit with Tony Franklin and the assistant coaches, and you think, why hasn't this guy moved on? Well, he's got a great situation there. He's getting paid a ton of money because now that's the trend. That's the biggest trend, is spending the money on facilities and all that stuff. Yes, but spending it on your assistants to keep them happy and prevent them from maybe going to a spot where they may not want to go 100%, but they need the money. So now they've got the money and they're comfortable keeping them there. But I wonder why other coaches around the country don't. You know, coaches go in practice and watch teams practice. They do. They come from all over the country. I'm going to go see Dabo's team practice and see what they do, this and that.
You speak about key cards not working. You're not coming anywhere near my facility.
But why don't they mimic what he has done from a, not an X's and O's standpoint, but more from
a life.
Lifestyle standpoint for his program, players, and coaches.
I don't know where the man has had to say no, because I've never heard that he's actually had an interview. Brent Venables, you can't be any more set up for a handful of years to go where you want. You don't have to go to, no offense, don't have to go to the MAC, don't have to go to the WAC, don't have to go any place except the big-time school. I don't know if they win on Monday night and they throw up a defensive effort that you go, damn. I've said this. I would fire my guy if he said, I want to. How many guys would be safe if Venables said, I'd like to coach over there? How many schools wouldn't fire their guy, buy him out to bring him in?
Do you think he's the quintessential coordinator, though.
Bud Foster, but better?
Yeah. No, I think he is. I'm not sure he wants to go be a head coach and to deal with that headache. When you get to be his age, and I'm not saying he's old, but you've been around for a while to see how much of a headache it can be for people at that head coaching spot, why do you want that if you're getting paid almost like a head coach right now and you've got the atmosphere and the situation you've got at Clemson?
Nick, you root for and you like Ryan Day a lot, and he could be the next Matt Rhule, where he could be the next NFL guy. There are only, in my mind, 7, 8, 9 schools that have Venable said, I want to come to your place, that they wouldn't fire their guy. 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, pay him out, buy him out, and thank
you.
I'm
not sure if I agree with you on that, though, because I think there are a lot of schools that say, God, I'd love to have him as a defensive coordinator. I'd pay him a lot of money to be my DC, but I'm not sure he's cut from the cloth that would make him a successful head coach.
So let's hear from Trevor Lawrence, of course. He of the 29-game streak, being a part of that, being undefeated as a starter, and also being a defending national champion, talking about all of that experience.
You know, still really exciting, and I think just the biggest thing is I've been there before, so it's not as, you know, I know what to expect more, but it's, you know, it's a different place, it's a different team, we're a different team, so everything's different, but just having that experience of playing in a national championship definitely is something that, you know, you take a little comfort in, just knowing that you've been there, you kind of know what to expect.
I mentioned yesterday or the day before, somebody's going to write the column. Somebody eloquently in a national guy is going to write the column. But you have to start thinking about, if Trevor Lawrence wins this game on Monday, somebody's going to write a column, and it should be getting written now, and it should just be send if they win. He has a chance to be the greatest college football player ever if winning is the measurement. He's not going to have Andre Ware's numbers, perhaps. He's not going to have Timmy Chang's numbers. He's not going to necessarily have a moment like Tim Tebow where the world goes, my God, did you see that? Did you hear that? But he could be, he's 60 minutes away from having an opportunity to being the greatest college football player ever.
That's a dadgum mistake.
Yeah, it is. You have the right two teams here because of everything surrounding these two programs. You got Dabo, who's entertaining. You've got Joe Burrow. You've got Trevor Lawrence.
You got Coach O.
And Coach O, the article on ESPN.com that was written about him yesterday.
I know.
I mean, if it wasn't real, you wouldn't think it was real.
There's never been a guy who matched his situation more than this guy. You couldn't central cast this because, again, if it was a movie, you said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this guy the head coach of a team that's going to in that. This is all, it reads fake.
And if he's at Penn State or Nebraska, it's not the same.
No.
Like, he has to be where he is right now.
Go Tigers.
The fact that he said, the day I wake up and I can't whoop another man's ass is the day I stay in bed. And I mean, that is so awesome. Because he's saying it not like whoop a guy's butt in a fight. He's talking about it, anything you do in your walk of life.
In case you don't know the story, when he was at Syracuse, Paul Pasqualoni said, we're going to start working out early. So the training staff had to be there to set everything up at 4 a.m. He was there when everybody else arrived, and they said, you're in great shape. Why are you here this early to work out? And he said what Cotter just said.
Yep.
Day I can't whoop a man's ass, I'm going to get out of bed.
All right, well, I can't argue with that logic.
No.
But that's why that's why the whole shirt off thing, you know, at first you go, what the hell is he doing? You go, that's who he is. That's who he is. It's built on the idea that if you're coming in at 6, I've already gotten mine in. I'll do another round with you, but I've already gotten mine in.
He would go to recruits' houses, and he would eat. If they would bring out crawfish, he would eat 15 pounds of crawfish. He ate 5 bowls of chili.
What did he know?
Chili
what did
another
he know?
Recruits' house.
You don't insult mom.
Nope.
No. Or I read somewhere where he went some restaurant with a recruit and they didn't have crawfish.
Yeah, Joe Burrow.
He brought in his own thing, like 15 pounds of crawfish.
He came in and said, what do you mean? I wanted to try some of the crawfish down here.
Oh, let me make a couple of calls. Give me a moment.
Which, by the way,
next thing you know, half hour later, here comes 15 pounds of crawfish, and Joe Burrow said, we ate it all.
The hell with, I don't know what a catch is. I don't know what's illegal and what's not. Like, are you allowed to say, well, I've got crawfish. Let's bring it in for this kid. I don't even know what's like what you're allowed to do.
He may have violated something day. Yeah, who knows?
But you agree with Lawrence.
He'd
have to win the Heisman because, again, I don't know if you could ever be.
You can't without winning the Heisman. It's that mythical. Like, you have to win it to be one of the greats.
Right.
And when you win it, you are one of the greats automatically.
But if he wins on Monday, he's setting himself up to walk into a room or walk into a door that is the, hey, do you know what? Because if you're undefeated for your entire career and you win 3 titles. And, oh, yeah, by the way, here's the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, you're the best quarterback to ever play the
game.
Who
are you fighting with at that point?
Because unlike Tim Tebow, he's not chucking it sidearm. Like, he has everything that you would want in a quarterback and the number one overall pick.
And he doesn't talk all that. Unless you talk to him.
You know what? When you played that clip, you know who he reminded me of? Jaime from Get Smart. He's like a robot out there.
Oh, I love that.
He's an ass-kicking robot. Like, he just goes out there, and whatever you need from him, he does.
And again, the way he responded, you said it, Ohio State was beating the tar out of them.
Oh.
The tar out of him specifically.
Yeah,
the way
it could have been 23-27 nothing.
To me, the way he responded tells you all you need to know about him.
He said it earlier this week when people were like, my God, the game is so far away. I needed the time, man. I got beat up in that game. He admits it. He's not trying to be anything he's not. He's another guy. You want to put a microphone under my nose? I'll speak. I'll be polite. The thing he said about the ACC, he was so on point. Well, Florida State, Miami, because they were supposed to be the ones, they were the water carriers of this thing. When they're not there, the conference takes a hit. We think we can play with anybody, but he understands why the conference takes a hit. Because the bucket carriers, the ones who are supposed to be doing the heavy lifting, don't do any heavy lifting right now.
Here's the aforementioned Ed Ogeron talking about the key to winning the game on Monday.
We got to win the turnover battle. You know, they plus 16 and we plus 8. Yeah, now obviously we're not going to catch them on that day, but we got to win the turnover battle. You know, we got to play an LSU standard performance. And it's not about Clemson. It's going to be about LSU. We got to play our best game.
You got to read this article. You've got to read the ESPN.com article. It goes back to him in high school with our buddy Bobby Hebert when they won the state championship. And Bobby said, we were a bunch of long-haired hippies.
He's told that story before. Now the story resonates because Ed Ogeron is a character unto himself. It reads like Paul Bunyan. He's the Paul Bunyan of college football coaches. You think, well, that can't be true. Well, think about it. It probably is.
They talked to his mother, who lives in the same small house in suburban Louisiana. She said, look, they won the state title in 77. He wore jersey number 77. And now I'm 77. So it's happening all over again.
Well, you know what that
sounds
like?
You're going to argue with Mama Ogeron. I'm not.
No, that sounds like Louisiana voodoo talk.
No question about that. Thank you for concurring, Coach.
Now, you talk about Lawrence being the greatest quarterback of all time in college football. What might happen? If LSU wins this game, you could certainly make the argument. You guys probably have that this is the greatest season in college football history. 15-0, like Clemson last year, but the schedule was tougher. You look at the teams they beat with the Heisman Trophy winner on that team.
And came out of nowhere.
He came out of nowhere. And then, I mean, the schedule is brutal, and to do it the way they did it, that season, you'd have a hard time giving me another season that was as great as what else you would put up.
So if you want to watch the game, you've got so many different avenues. At least 13 your bosses, Cotter, are going to offer. 13 other ways aside from the game itself.
Well, that's not possible.
You've got the field pass on ESPN2. You've got the command center.
Oh, it's possible.
On ESPN News, you've got the data center on the goal line network. You've got the hometown radio broadcast on the ACC and SEC networks. You've got the SkyCast on the ESPN app.
Yeah, you do.
You've got the All-22 on the ESPN app. And you've also got now the RefCast, aside from the coach's film room. The RefCast, three officials, former officials, are going to work the RefCast and explain to you on the ESPN app everything that's going on.
We ain't screwing around this weekend. And we're all going to New Orleans, and this is the largest contingent of ESPN personnel going to any one city in the history of this company.
It's an invasion is what you're telling me.
I'm not even joking.
It's Normandy.
It's like a half dozen hotels. It is planes, trains, and automobiles getting there.
So I'm surprised maybe they don't own the rights, but there's not a Real Housewives cast? Is there a...
I think Bravo is under the NBC umbrella.
That's the issue. I think we've run out of networks. I think Disney Plus got maybe caught off guard.
And ABC's not going to touch The Bachelor.
You know what would be hilarious? Do you know what would be hilarious? And they could do this. They have the right. They should do two more casts. I don't know if they have extra networks, but they'll go buy them this weekend and do it. They should have an all Marvel cast where you have all people dressed up like cosplay Marvel people, and then they should do the mascot, Mickey Goofy, where they can't speak. They're just reacting.
Or you do the Walt Disney Mickey Mouse voice.
I'm not so sure why they haven't thought about this. Marvel's hot. I don't know if you know. You want a Star Wars? Can you get a third network?
Disney owns the rights to Star Wars.
Right.
So you could go out there and have like dudes like YouTube Star Wars geeks having lightsaber fights.
Marvel Channel.
One in a Clemson orange and one in LSU.
Star Wars Channel. Mm-hmm. And then they can't speak, but let's watch Goofy's reaction channel. I'm surprised it's not being done yet.
Do you know, I actually, when I was at Fox, I had a producer who used to work at Disney, and he said back in the day, all the characters used to drive up, and they used to have to park on an off-site lot because kids can't see Goofy with his hat off. Like, that's a major crime at Disney. So you would have a lineup of dudes like Goofy and Mickey with their hats off in their hands, smoking Marlboro Reds, waiting for the bus to take them onto the Disney World lot. That visual is so amazing.
That'll scar a kid for life. There's no question about it.
I saw, and I think she might have gotten in trouble on the monorail. Swear to God, my kid's four eyes. I swear to God. The one from, who is the...
Still gambling Aladdin. On his kid's eyes.
So far, something's so never changed, Cotter.
Jasmine from Aladdin? Is it Jasmine?
Yeah. If you say so.
Yeah, Jasmine. Yeah.
Jasmine, thank you. So we're on a monorail leaving the park, and it's late. The park is closed. The young woman who played Jasmine is on the monorail. And I thought the same thing. You're not allowed to get on and be with the people. She's with two of her girlfriends who are very princess-looking.
But she's still supposed to be in character.
No. But she's not.
Yeah,
no,
because Jasmine doesn't ride the monorail.
She's in.
But, I mean, she still has
she's
no,
in
she's in
on.
Street clothes.
So how do you know it's Jasmine, then?
Makeup?
Because two kids come up to her.
Oh, they saw her in the park earlier.
And then walked up to her on a monorail, and I'm looking and going, yeah, she could pass her. Oh, I don't know if this is supposed to be happening.
Yeah, like what's on the other side of the curtain? You're
exactly,
not supposed to see
Exactly, like
that.
She's wearing a pair of jeans and ponytail, mm-hmm. and two kids came up and said, I just want to tell you it was so great to meet you today.
Jasmine's off the clock, doll.
Large Marge's voice.
If I was 30 years younger and 30 pounds lighter, I would have fired on her so big at that moment. But it was her. These kids walked up to her and said, it was so nice to her. I said, I think she's breaking the rules here. Because I thought the same thing. You're not really allowed to be.
Kids with an attention span of about 3 seconds can recognize, you know, Jasmine's eyes from 5 minutes of seeing her at the park earlier in the day.
Speaking of breaking the rules, there could be the one biggest controversy nobody's talked about until now when it comes to the championship game on Monday night. We'll kick that around when we come back. Chris Cotter with us from ESPN and the ACC Network. It's Domino and Cellini on the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM.
Stand up, y'all!
Take it easy, Domino, will you? We the best. 10:50. Yeah, I know. Domino and Cellini, the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Chris Cotter in with us as well. I want to remind folks that the 10 o'clock hour brought to you by Superior Pro.
I feel bad for that kid of his, because now he's got another one on the way, DJ Khaled. The kid he carries around like a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Every day that produced his album at 2 years old. Now he's got another kid. Don't you think that kid's sweating bullets now? Dad's going to have a new favorite?
Could be. You never know until they come out of the womb how you're going to feel.
I would spend my entire childhood growing up watching and learning from my dad and seeing how was this guy worth that much money doing absolutely nothing. I mean, he just, like, all he does is he puts artists together and yells at the beginning of every song.
Says his name.
DJ Khaled! That's 100 mil. Cha-ching.
DJ Khaled!
Another 100 million.
Stand up, y'all!
Here we go.
See, Domino took it a step further.
Yeah, well, stand up, y'all. It's one of the great works. I say he's the bottled water of the entertainment industry.
Amazing. I'd love to somebody should just do a study. I just want to follow him around. See how he does it, because I want to do it.
What's amazing is people as homeowners think they know what to do when it comes to painting, siding, and windows. Superior Pro. They're the pros to know. If you have those issues, go to superiorpro.com to learn more today. Again, they bring you the hour of 10 o'clock here on the Fan. So let's talk about the RefCast, why it could be a big deal on the ESPN app on Monday. The Pac-12 is officiating the championship game. Mike Pereira from Fox said, the one noticeable difference to me is the perception that the Pac-12 officials are the worst. Now, he trained them. They were so bad that he had to go there and train them 10 years ago and change the way that they prepared for games. Now, there were instances this year where it didn't make a difference. A lot of missed calls, a lot of blown calls, officials suspended. Let's hope it doesn't come down to that on Monday. Let's please hope it doesn't.
Well, I did the Armed Forces Bowl down in Fort Worth, which was Tulane and Southern Miss. And when we found out we had Pac-12 officials, and Tulane came in 122nd in the country in penalties per game, one of the most penalized teams in the whole country, plus Pac-12 officials, I thought it was going to be a four-hour-long game. I thought it was going to be long permaflag. Just keep the flag on the field, and we'll tell you when it's not a penalty.
When we pick up the flag.
That's when the play just continues. But it wasn't that bad. So maybe the Pac-12 is coming around.
May I? We do this thing every once in a while called theater. This is now Pac-12 official theater. I want you to close your eyes for a second. It's two Pac-12 officials. This is how I believe it might go on the night of the championship game. two Pac-12 officials on the field working officiating this game. You believe how good these guys are? And seen. Because they've never seen anything like this.
The guy just can't even respond. He's so amazed.
Yeah. You believe how good these guys are? I think they might get caught watching because they haven't seen football this good, this close, the entirety of the year. They might not know what to do when people actually make really good plays.
Or it's like a three and out.
Damn, Jimmy, you see this?
That's the thing, a three right. and out. They might be like, what was that? Wait, move the chains. No, they didn't get a first down. That's a fourth down. They didn't get a first down? That's already fourth down?
I can't believe we lost track again. Again, let's hope it doesn't come down to that. I will say this, Cotter, and you know, being around Dabo more so than us and anybody else around here, I just kept saying over and over again that LSU, they're a team of density, to quote George McFly.
Good one.
But the closer we get to kickoff, the more I'm starting to think.
Whoa.
Maybe Clemson.
You call them a cute little story.
I know. I picked
really?
Them to beat Ohio.
No,
I didn't do that.
Relative to LSU, we said they had no chance.
I picked them to beat Ohio State. I said it was going to be LSU and Clemson in the national championship
but
game.
Clemson is not going to what? No chance. They don't
yeah,
win this game.
I think LSU is going to pull away. I just don't know. The closer now we get to kickoff, the more I'm thinking that Clemson, I think, could very much win this
you
game.
You quoted McFly, and now I think about, like, you know, Al Pacino in Glengarry Glen Ross when he said, I'm a contrarian. They go that way. I choose to go the other way.
I'm Richard Roma, all of a sudden.
Mr. Ricky Roma.
Yeah.
So, to your point, that happens all the time when you look at a number in Vegas, and everyone's going one way, and you start to think,
well,
you know what? Maybe I'm thinking the other way on this.
What I think has happened is you've realized that undefeated is undefeated. National champion, been there, done it. It matters. LSU, the magical carpet ride, I don't know how many of those stories are real. I think every once in a while you want them to be real, and then you sort of back off a little bit when it doesn't happen. Oh, I should have seen this coming. You're playing it now. It took you a while because I thought you were extremely dismissive of Clemson's opportunity to win this football game.
I absolutely was, especially that Sunday after the playoff games were finished.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt that LSU was a team of destiny. Not only that, the offensive weapons, when they don't have their top running back and they still take you apart like they did against Oklahoma.
Well, you saw a receiver go for four touchdowns, flash four.
How do you slow them down?
Who wasn't even the Biletnikoff winner, by the way?
I know.
That's the other guy. I mean, that's how many weapons
they
have.
Do you watch? So I was on the sidelines for that game. And every once in a while you go, okay, what am I really seeing here? I saw the scoreboard and it was done. Middle of the second quarter, I went up to the booth and I said, Joe Burrow's not finishing this game. And I don't do that. I never play the it's over when it's over, gambling. You don't count it until it's done. But I knew he wasn't going to finish that game. He didn't play the entire fourth quarter. They let him take a bow and got him out of the game. But the thing that I noticed more than anything else, the guys who were waving the towels to the LSU fans going, look at us, were the guys who didn't play. Everybody who played walked to the middle of the field, shook a hand. This was a business trip. And then Joe Burrow taught that you're not a great football team, by the way. You can do everything LSU has done. And you said be one of the great seasons ever. But it won't be if you don't win this game.
No,
this was a business trip. They dismantled a good football team and just said, yeah, of course we were supposed to do that.
They dismantled two top five teams in the month of December.
100-38.
Like nothing in Georgia and Oklahoma.
I know.
Took them apart at the seams.
Business trip.
But these two quarterbacks, they both make throws and make plays that nobody else can make. So LSU hadn't played a guy like Lawrence this year who can make all those throws and make all those plays and run for 60 yards if you need him to.
But do you notice things like that when you're in the booth, or do you feel things like that? I looked around and go, that guy's waving a towel like he didn't play. That guy didn't play.
No,
where are the guys who
played?
I was
at the Fiesta Bowl. I was on the field at the Fiesta Bowl, and to what we talked about already in this hour, they were getting their butts kicked. But there was no panic. There's never any panic with
Clemson. So that's their personality.
LSU's
personality was, we're coming to Atlanta, we're going to beat you, and we're going to go get ready for the next one.
And Clemson and Dabo even said it, you know, to us after the game. We took their best punch, and we're only down 16.
Do you remember
still okay.
Remember the cup we played? And I said, I believe he said there was not one second where I didn't think we were going to win the game. And I was like, you know, some guys say that. I believe
it. Yeah, I totally do.
So what's the schedule like now for you? What are you doing for the championship game?
I'm heading down there on Sunday. I'm hosting a two-hour pregame show on the ACC network. So that'll be a million people on that show. That'll be a blast. And then when that's done, it's I've got a few more football things. I'll be at the Senior Bowl coming up in a couple of weeks. That's always fun to be there for practices and a lot of NFL player
personnel
folks.
See who the Falcons
folks.
Fall in love with this year. It's always somebody.
And Saban always makes his It's funny. Saban will go down to Mobile for the Senior Bowl, mm-hmm. and that's sort of his South Alabama recruiting visit. And it is like, you know,
godlike.
It really is.
He's a rock star.
It's like the
when
Pope
he,
is there.
When he shows up, you don't see him, but the word is around Lad Peebles that he's here. He's in the parking lot. He's in town. The helicopter just landed.
It's like the VIP
People
room.
People literally start buzzing.
There really is. He's here?
It's like the VIP room. You never see the guy, but people go, I think he's in there. He's in there. Nobody sees him.
And you don't see him when he shows up at the stadium. You just see 8,000 cameras and reporters and everything around him. You can't see him. He's in that gaggle over there that's coming up close to us at the 20-yard line.
You work in the ACC world. I know because Clemson and I know because of the other stuff. Is there a buzz about what Roy Williams said about his own team? This is the least talented bunch I've been around, but he just...
He doesn't have to say it because you know it. I mean, the beginning. Yeah, I did their
are
opener.
Are you supposed to say it?
I did their opener against Notre Dame, and they have two very good freshmen and probably the best player in the country in Cole Anthony when he's healthy, but he's not. And then they had two grad transfers. The graduate transfer thing in college basketball is very different than it is in football. They got a guy from VMI, and they got a guy from Charleston Southern, and you look at it and you say, okay, these are good players in their own right in the leagues they played in last year, but is this North Carolina? Is Carolina going to rely on these two guys to win them an ACC championship? There aren't ACC rosters in the ACC right now. You look around this league and you say, hey, you know, Bennett has it going at Virginia. Whoever he throws out there, they're going to be good. Duke's great. Louisville's great. After that, NC State and Florida State are okay, but the rest of the rosters, you look at those teams and the five guys they put out there and you say, is that an ACC roster?
But he's in charge of picking the talent.
I don't
that's
think
the thing that was the crazy. He said, this is the least talented bunch I've been around. No,
I think I used the term gifted. They're not.
They
gifted.
Aren't. And here's the thing with him. He's not like Coach K and Cal, where he's used to four guys going to one and dones going to the NBA every year. And I don't think he calculated and really planned appropriately for all those guys going. He lost, what, six players from last year. Now, all of a sudden, he looks at it and says, oh, geez, I got to get some grad transfers.
As we said, they didn't exactly respond to the not gifted comment last night either.
No. But I think he played the I and them card, which is really a tough thing to do when you're a college coach. I'm over here. They're over there.
All right, Kyler.
I don't want much to do with them.
Thanks for coming in. Enjoy New Orleans.
All right, guys. Thanks. I appreciate it. Good seeing you.
I like when you come in because you kind of look at us and go, yeah, my life's not all that bad. Look at these two.
He doesn't have to come in to think that.
You guys.
I talked to him on the phone. He doesn't need to be in our presence to think that.
You guys have a blast.